Dublin.
Welcome everyone to Studio Soundtracks, the monthly program that takes listeners behind the scenes of making music for film, television, and video games. I am your host, Chandler Poling, and today we are talking about music for video games with composers Chris Valesco and Nainita Desai. Welcome to you both. Thank you for being here.
Thanks, Chandler.
Nice to be here.
Thank you. Great to be here.
Well, yeah. With the exciting news of the Recording Academy adding a new category to allow video game soundtracks to receive a Grammy, we at Studio Soundtracks wanted to speak with two composers who have written music for games that are entering into this historic new category. So it is really an exciting year for video game composers. Chris, how did that news strike you to learn that there's this new Grammy category?
Well, you know, we've been looking to do this for years. And I have to say, though, that no one is more excited than my mom, just in case I get in and can take her to the Grammy. And she's been talking about that since I, you know, started composing. So,
well, I hope that your mom gets a chance to get her Grammy dreams and have them come true. Nainita, what about yourself? When you heard that this they created this category for video game scores, what was your reaction to that?
It's very exciting. I mean, I know that the genre, the medium has been underrepresented for so many years, and having to and it is such a different discipline as well. So it deserves a space of its own within the canon of the zillions of categories out there. So yeah, I think it was about time, and I know the amount of work and effort that's gone into it. So I hope that it's here to stay, and that it just encourages the validation and the importance of game music within the entire spectrum of composing for linear and non-linear media. So yeah, it's about time, and it was really, really well welcomed and very exciting for the future.
Yeah, absolutely. It had been 10 years since Austin Wintry got the first nomination for Journey. So it has been, then there's been 10 years of amazing video game soundtracks. So yeah. I, for one, am so excited to see this category created and have recognition for game music, because it is a booming industry. And I think a lot of people kind of might dismiss it because they don't play video games themselves, but little do they know, so many people do.
Yes.
It's so funny because when I first started, the game music was really kind of looked down on, and I would meet people for the first time, and you know, they're like, "Oh, what do you do?" And I'd say, "Oh, I write music for video games." And I would say 9 out of 10 people kind of got that little like look on their face, like, "Oh." And it was like, "Well, I'm sure things will turn around for you at some point, and you'll get a, you know, you can score something, you know, important." Or it was like, "Oh, well, I've only been, you know, trying my whole professional career to fit into this niche, but thanks." And now it's just, yeah, it's so great to see the validation.
Absolutely. Yeah. I mean, we just had in the UK, we have the proms at the Royal Albert Hall taking place through the summer season. And a couple of weeks ago, we just had the first prom focusing purely on video game music. And Austin came over, and you know, suites of his music, and Hilda Gudnadottir, and you know, Battlefield, and the audience were just, it was an incredible atmosphere, and so welcome. And as you say, you know, the major studios like Abbey Road and Air, they're booked solid recording video game scores. So I think, you know, for it to be acknowledged as an art form in its own right is, in so many different ways, from live performances to the awards, it's just encouraging for the younger and, you know, generations of composers coming up who are really excited about it.
Yeah, absolutely. That was a beautiful concert. I wasn't able to attend it personally, but I've listened to it. And so if anyone here listening is interested, you can go to BBC's website. They have the whole program. You can stream it. It is fantastic. And I will say the Kingdom Hearts section made my heart sing because it was incredible. So were you two gamers growing up, or did you kind of suddenly find yourself in the video game industry as a composer?
I definitely was a gamer growing up, and my first system was actually a Commodore 64. And I would play, I don't know if you remember those, but they had a separate hard drive and a separate little power box thing next to it. And it would get so hot. Mm-hmm. And you couldn't save. Bard's Tale was my game back then. And there was no way to easily save, so I would cover it up with like some clothes so that my mom during the day didn't see that like, oh, he left his computer on and would turn it off or something, because I had to save that game. And then coming back, if you touched that thing, it was like the temperature of the sun. Like, I can't believe it didn't set the house on fire.
Wow.
At some point. but yeah, no, I was a huge gamer, and then kind of took a big hiatus during high school and college for a while, and then now I'm back at it.
Nainita, what about yourself? What's your history with video games?
Yeah, well, I mean, I started off as, well, as a young teenager. I think probably giving away my age here, but I started off playing at my best friend's house. I'd go in the afternoon, 4 o'clock after school, we'd go and play Space Invaders on her Atari system. And I couldn't afford it, and she had it, and it was just a dream. I loved playing on that. And then as a teenager, I was quite geeky and technical orientated. So I got into sound design and became a sound designer on feature films, but I really wanted to become a composer. So I left the world of sound design, and I remember sending off 100 showreels to a directory of all the all the film and TV and games companies out there. And I got a reply from two companies out of the 100 reels that I sent out. And one of them was from a games publisher, one of the most successful games publishers in the UK called Empire Interactive at the time. And they replied to me, and I had a meeting with them, and they said, we have 5 or 6 developers making games for us in many different genres. Would you be interested in, having meetings with them? And I did. So I ended up doing sound effects, and then I got in to do music as well for games. But as a gamer, I had a PC, an Amstrad PC at the age of 14 or 15, and I'd play silly games, on my computer at home. I remember playing a Bond game, sort of Live and Let Die was turned into a video game, the franchise, and sports games, skiing down slopes. I mean, it was primitive at the time, but the first games that I ever worked on was Sheep and Pro Pinball, and I created all the sound effects and music for a flight simulator. And so that was my sort of early beginnings and experience of being a gamer. And then my career digressed, and I moved out of games for many years and then got back in again recently.
Wonderful. Well, we heard about kind of your origin as far as how you got into games. But Chris, how did you get into games? What was kind of your first time to write music for games?
So I studied music at UCLA, and while I was there, I thought I wanted to do film. And around that time, somebody played me this score for a game called Outcast. And I was still kind of in my game playing hiatus, but I heard it and it sounded like Star Wars, and it was, recorded with a live orchestra and choir in Moscow, and it just completely blew me away. And I was like, well, that's like exactly the kind of music I want to be writing. Maybe I should change my focus. And so I just went 100% put all my energy into trying to score games. And it actually took me quite a long time, about 6 years ish after I graduated, scoring my first game. And it was all because, of relationships that I'd made over those 6 years, going to E3, sneaking my way into E3, going to GDC, just, in general, talking to as many people as I could without trying to bother them, and just laying the, planting the seeds for the relationship to grow. And that's what happened. I eventually became friends with this guy, Mark Morrison, who worked at Atari, and he introduced me to somebody, and they introduced me to somebody. And so the first game I ever scored was Battlestar Galactica, which came out right before the reboot of the TV show. And, I got the call to write music, to pitch on this game. And, these days now you get a pitch and you're like, oh, okay, you've got, a couple of weeks to do it or whatever. But I got a call from my then agent and said, oh, they need it by like 5 o'clock tonight. And it was like, whoa, that's pretty fast turnaround. Wow. And I was working then what was then would become my last kind of, job. and I was a telemarketer. It was just the worst thing ever. And I called in. They knew I wanted to be a composer, and I said, "Oh, I've got this opportunity. I need to take the day off." They said, "Nope, not a chance. We need you in here." And so I just said, "Screw it," and I quit my job. I wrote this demo, got it turned in by 5 o'clock. At like 5:02, I get a call from the audio director, and I couldn't believe it. I'm like, "Oh my God, I got the gig!" And he said, "Chris, we just got your demo. We love it. We weren't expecting to hear any more though, and we've already given the job to somebody else." And I was like, "Oh no!" It was just, dreams crushing, falling all around me. And the next day, I was like, "You know what? I've spent now like 7 years, 6, 7 years trying to do this. It's not working out. I'm going to go back to school, and I'm going to go to culinary school and be a chef." And then literally the next day, they called back and said, "We loved your demo. We loved your gumption. We're going to give you one track to do, one cinematic." And that cinematic was long enough that it was going to pay my rent for that month. And I was like, "Oh my God, I made it. I'm a professional composer." And then that just, turned into more and more music. They wound up actually firing the composer they hired and hired me to score the rest of it. And then I went on and scored a bunch of their games.
Wow,
Wow.
fantastic. Great story.
Great origin. Almost a chef. I couldn't, can't wait to see the alternate reality of your restaurant that you open. It's probably
It's
going to
called
be Lee
Splits. I,
Geiger or
yeah.
whatever themed. Well, at the top of the show, we heard music by Chris Velasco from a video game he scored called Dauntless. It's the main theme called I Am Dauntless. But next, I want to play a track from Nainita's video game. This is a track titled Life from the game Immortality. So since we just listened to this suite titled Life, Nainita, why don't you tell us about the game Immortality and what it's all about, and why are there suites that within the game?
Okay, so it's quite an unusual format and game in that it's the perfect hybrid of film and non-linear game playing, which is quite unusual. So Sam Barlow is the developer, and I scored his previous game called Telling Lies a few years ago, and that was full motion video like Immortality is. But Immortality is a much more sophisticated evolution, if you like, of Telling Lies. And it's the story, it's a narrative game, and it's all filmed with actors and live action, which is such fun. I was presented with a 280 page script to work from. And so in terms of the way you play it, it's basically, it's an interactive horror film trilogy. And it's about Marissa Marcel, an actress, a film star who made three movies, and you're trying to uncover the mysterious disappearance of Marissa. And she was an actress who was set to become a huge movie star in the 1970s, but she only ever starred in three films that were never publicly released. And to figure out what happened, you have to, as the player, you have to sift through lost footage of those films, with collections of three movies that were made, that were lost. One from 1968, another one from 1970, and another one from the late 90s. And so we're covering, and it's all filmed in three different movie genres, which was really exciting for me. And it's an empty puzzle in that, puzzle board, in that you have a film grid, and you are, as the player, you're in the edit suite with an old Moviola system. It's all analog and old fashioned, and you have found the lost footage of these kind of behind the scenes footage and casting calls and TV show interviews and the actual footage from the films themselves. And your job is to scrub through every available scene, often frame by frame, dissecting the visual elements on display while mapping out their place in the bigger picture. So you're sort of in a non-linear way, you're dipping in and out of scenes in the film. You never know what you're going to be watching next. But what's really clever about the game is that the technique, I guess, you know, that you're using to navigate through it, is you're using this technique called the match cut. So it allows you to click on an individual image in the game, in the scene, and discover other scenes in the game's database that have similar images in them. So, for example, if you've got something like a screaming face in a shot, and you click on it, it will take you to a mouth opened in the middle of having sex in another, you know. Or if you click on a light bulb, it'll take you to a candelabra in another, sort of like this sort of synchronized parallel kind of, everything's tagged with metadata. So you're using the image itself rather than keywords. And that makes it really easy to play. And on the surface level, it seems easy, but you really have to dig deep. You know, the options are just endless. You've got about 10 hours of film there to play around with. So that's, makes it a really novel, unique way of engaging with a film.
Absolutely, sounds fascinating. And now, since there's three films, is that what caused the three kind of themes of life, religion, and art?
Yeah. So we had a lot of debate and conversations, and you know, I don't. I know with other games and, you know, in scoring film and TV, I'm very visually inspired. So I get lots of images and little bits of gameplay footage. Here, I had none of that. So I'd rely on my conversations, my in-depth conversations with Sam over the months, and notes and sharing playlists and so on. So there are three themes. Each theme is linked to each of the films. And instead of sort of writing as a in a homage or a pastiche to a different film genre, we wanted to create a unified score based on an orchestral sound palette that encapsulated the essence, the idea of each film. So the three themes, you've got life, which is linked to Minsky, which is a 1970s New York City set thriller about the death of a famous artist. And it's about living in the moment, living in the moment, engaging in the physical pleasures and capturing that. And it's sensual. And so I used the saxophone for that. I mean, the basic sound palette was orchestral and strings, but within that, there were slight differences there. And it was very textual and atmospheric. The second theme is called art, and it's linked to the 1999 subversive thriller Two of Everything, about a pop star and her body double. And a little bit, I don't know, inspired by that Whitney Houston film with Kevin Costner, which the name escapes me now.
Bodyguard.
The Bodyguard, yes. And so for that, I got to write a pop song for the artist, for the pop artist, which was my homage to early Britney and Madonna hits. So that was a lot of fun to write. And art is about the attempt to capture or recreate things in a purer form, like so the analogy that Sam gave me was, if you think about Picasso painting and repainting again and again the line to get the perfect line, it's the synchronization between the hand and the artist, you know, sculpting or painting or typing, and synchronizing that with the brain and the imagination. So it's about the magic of creative inspiration, which we can identify with as composers, because, you know, we're composing and we're creating something tangible, and it's about the magic of creation, creation. And then the final theme is religion, and that's the final theme. And that connects us to the 1968 film Ambrosia, which is based on this notorious Gothic, 18th century Gothic novel called The Monk. And it's sort of inspired by Hitchcock erotic thriller and neo-noir kinds of themes. So The Monk deals with life after death and religion and all those sort of psychological ideas and existential ideas, sorry, and that there's something more purer and abstract. And so I used the choir, you know, as Sam said, let's have something religious. And we always sort of try to steer away from convention. We never want to follow cliches and tropes musically. But here he said, well, let's have something religious that's slightly fantastical, with a little bit of sprinkling of magic. So you hear hints of little bells and you hear the choir, but in an unusual form. And there's a sense of the miracle and the divine and the rapture, you know, a bit inspired by that amazing film, German film, feature film called Perfume. I don't know if you remember that, with Dustin Hoffman was in
I've
that
seen
film.
It.
So,
yes, I've seen
yeah,
it.
It's this amazing film, you know, with thousands of people in a square falling, collapsing to this man who comes across as this, like the new Jesus. And so, Sam's analogy for the religion theme was, he said, imagine like you're in an art gallery like the Louvre in Paris, and you're staring at a religious painting long enough to feel something of the transcendent, pure feelings emanating that it's trying to evoke. And I thought about that while composing, and sure enough, that's what came out with religion. And then there's a twist to the theme, to the main themes. And you have the subverted version, which is the dark subverted version of each theme. And then you also have mapped one-to-one with the main theme running in parallel, is a supernatural theme. And the best analogy I can make to describe that is, you know, in Stranger Things, where you have the upside down, mm-hmm. and you have the normal world, and then you have the upside down, and they're both, these worlds are running in parallel. That's what it was like with the theme. So there is an eerie, mysterious quality to it, where I really warped and twisted the main themes and made them into this kind of supernatural, a bit like David Lynch. You know, we're both, Sam and I are both very influenced by David Lynch, and you have is that film Blue Velvet, where the film starts off with the green grass and the front white picket fence and the water sprinklers going in the small town America, and everything's hunky-dory and it's a beautiful world, and then the camera pans underneath the ground and you've got the dark soil with the maggots and the insects, and it's the dark underbelly of what's really going on in this town. And so we love sort of exploring those ideas, you know, a lot of film inspirational ideas from all those decades of cinema, and imbuing them into the music and the score.
Wonderful, wonderful. And Chris, I want to talk about Dauntless next. And I want to, if you could just kind of give us a little bit about what the game is about, but also next I want to play your track, this beautiful track called Priana's Theme. So tell us a little bit about your video game and then set us up for this theme and kind of why it's important to you.
Okay. So Dauntless it's an action RPG. It actually came out in 2019 publicly, but it's kind of it's constantly being updated. So every month or so there's a new update that comes out, and kind of unofficial DLCs sort of. And so I've been scoring this game for probably 5 years. There's gotta be 4 hours of music in it at this point. And I, every time the game gets updated with new content, I'm just writing more and more music. So the concept is you join a party, you're on these floating islands. This is kind of like post Earth, something has happened. You don't really know what, but post Earth, floating islands based on this sort of magic in the game called Aether. And there are other islands in the sky that have these behemoths, and they are they're kind of challenging humanity at this point. So you've got to go, and your players are called slayers. You have to go slay the behemoths. Priani, she is one of the kind of NPCs on your main home island, and I just thought it would be great to kind of expand the lore of Dauntless by writing sort of themes and leitmotifs for each character that you run into, even if you never, you know, you don't ever play with them. They're just kind of there to give you quests and things. And Dr. Priani had kind of a tragic past where she lost her wife. And I just wanted to write this kind of longing theme with you know, some sadness but beauty in it.
Wonderful. All right, well, let's hear that theme. Here is Priani's theme from the Dauntless soundtrack. I'm curious, guys. Now, what would you say is one of the most challenging things about writing music for video games? Is there something about the genre specifically that calls upon skills or a mentality that is unlike traditional linear narrative kind of films or TV series? And are you ever caught in situations where you're writing music for, say, a character that maybe a player never interacts with and they never get to experience that music? So I would just love to kind of get a little insight about how writing music for video games and in the industry, what it's like and what's the challenging aspect of it. And we can start with Nainita.
I have a lot of experience. The majority of my experience is writing for film and TV, you know, the linear form, and it's much more passive. And that's my comfort zone. And I always like taking myself out of my comfort zone and exploring other processes and ways, which keeps you on your toes. And I guess some of the, even within the world of games, there are tried and tested routes that are familiar and, you know, approaches. I'm scoring a game at the moment for Electronic Arts, and that has a much more conventional process where I get to see different levels and biomes and areas, and we're writing combat tracks and exploratory tracks and boss fights. And for me, that's new. Because I've never really done that. So my way of handling it and approaching it will be different, and that's quite exciting. But with Sam, it's like nothing you've ever worked on before, because we're all finding our feet and we're trying to come up with our own approaches of, because there is no real precedent. Sam has created this subgenre of full motion video games. So that in itself is a real challenge. And I'm a very visually inspired composer. So working from scripts, which is what I have to do with Sam, that's another challenge for me. And it forces me to be creative in a different way, because in a way it's much more liberating, because I don't have visuals in front of me, and that's exciting. But what I do have to do is capture the essence of the game in a very restricted amount of music. So unlike Chris, for example, you know, you're writing 4 hours of music, there's so much for you to explore there, and you're on an epic musical journey over a couple of years, you know, if not longer, no doubt. But and for me, this was a couple of years work, but I had time to write music, sit back and work on other projects, and then come back to it, and then think, oh, I can improve things here and there. So there's much more liberating, much more opportunity for me to go back and revisit my themes and refine and tweak them. That was fun. And just perfect things, you know, it's the OCD in me wanting to perfect the idea. You know, they're covering sort of, it's like writing when someone dies. They have 150 word obituary written about them in the local newspaper. Mm-hmm. And you're summarizing someone's life in 150 words. How do you do that in a very efficient way? And I'm kind of having to do that with writing themes for Sam's games, because I'm having to write one singular piece of music that's, I don't know, 7 minutes long, and encapsulate the whole strand of the game, you know, religion or art or life, in one singular piece of music, which isn't easy. And we find our own language of communication. And from the last game, you know, we've found it to be a really, I know what turns Sam on musically, and we'll share musical mood boards and playlists. And that's kind of our process. And also it not just the actual musicality of the themes, in so much as, you know, the notes that the musicians are playing, but it's the sound that they're making that's really intrigues us, you know, where I'm warping and twisting the music. Or so I've worked with, on Telling Lies, I worked with the London Contemporary Orchestra, and on this game, Immortality, I worked with the Budapest Arts Orchestra, and they're very sort of perceptive and open to the textures and the sound of the violins and the strings, and, you know, where you're attacking, you know, the sound of the bow on the bridge, which has a grating gritty sound to it. So that was something that was really important to me as well. So yeah, it's a roller coaster of a journey working with Sam and trying to create our own ways and methods of you know, achieving things musically.
Absolutely. I'm sure. Chris, what about you? What's a challenging aspect of your job as a video game composer, and what do you find to be the most challenging when approaching a game?
You know, I feel like approaching a game or a film or a TV show is, it's, the beginning is all pretty similar, which is you're just staring at a blank canvas, and you know, the moment of panic sets in, and I've forgotten what I'm doing, and you know, I've scored probably around 150 games, and each one is exactly the same. It's just that moment of sheer terror, but that's not, you know, specific to games really. But for me, for games, it's not the interactivity, it's not the looping or the different layers. It's I feel like with film and TV, you know, because it is a linear medium and you're watching the same action that's identically identically played back every time, the music, I feel like, starts to write itself. It's like, okay, well, we slow down here, we have a break here, we, you know, we switch orchestration here because this is happening at the same time every time. With games, you know, I'm lucky to get to see much of anything really. A lot of times it's just concept art, and you know, it's like, oh well, eventually we hope that the game may look something like this. And so every piece of music almost feels like it's concert music, you know, written to just my imagination. But at the same time, you have to rein it in and think, well, how will this work with what's going on screen and in the gameplay? And so I think that's the hardest bit for me, is just conjuring up so much music that will work in this medium that you can't actually see while you're writing it.
That's hard. Yeah.
I'm going to play some music now from both of your games. First, you're going to hear the theme Religion from Nainita's score to Immortality, followed by the track Dark Harvest from Dauntless by Chris Valesco. Here they are.
Thank you.
Guys, we've reached the end of the show, and I can't believe how fast this conversation has gone. It's been great to learn about music for video games and your approach to each. I was curious, and I ask this of all my guests, is what was the first album you purchased, and what was the last thing you listened to?
I know the first album I purchased, which was given to me, actually, by my mother. We went to the Harrods department store's record department when I was really, really little, and we bought in the summer sale for 50 cents the soundtrack to Ennio Morricone's The Good, the Bad, and the Ugly, and for a few dollars more and a fistful of dollars. So that was my first album that I bought.
And the last thing you listened to?
I'm going to let Chris go first because okay. I need to think what was the last thing I listened to.
Chris, what was the first album that you purchased?
It was actually two albums in the same day. It was a pretty glorious day. It was the record for Michael Jackson's Thriller and John Williams' Star Wars.
Both classics. Which are
two, yeah, I feel like those two albums really kind of helped shape my life. The last thing I listened to is maybe a bit unexpected, but I was cleaning house a little bit this morning, and I noticed that Slipknot had a few new singles for an album that's coming out. So I was listening to Slipknot. I've got some old metal roots that go back for me, and it's always a pleasure to kind of dip my toe back into that genre.
I love it. We don't have many metalheads on the show, so I appreciate a Slipknot reference. Nainita, have you figured? Yes.
Yeah. Well, actually, I was just listening to the new score by David Buckley for The Sandman, which I'm really enjoying. In fact, I'm enjoying the series, mm-hmm. and I just love the music on that. So very, very recent release.
Yes.
What else have I been listening to? That's the last thing I was listening to. And actually, the video game score to Tomb Raider, 2013 score to Tomb Raider. I was listening to that, refreshing my memory of that. But it's just an indicator. I tend not to listen to much music when I'm composing.
Of course.
Otherwise, I'll just end up spouting some other composer's music in my work. but on Immortality, we were listening to all sorts of crazy stuff from the 60s and the 70s. The soundtrack to Clute, I really enjoyed that. Mm-hmm. Those 70s noir, 80s noir, neo-noir movies, like soundtrack to The Specialist with Sharon Stone and Sylvester Stallone. I love the score for The Specialist by John Barry. I'm a huge John Barry fan.
Beautiful. Wonderful. Well, thank you both for being on the show. I really appreciate you taking the time to be on Studio Soundtracks, only on Dub Lab Radio. Our outro music is going to be another piece from Immortality. This is the final theme of the trilogy titled Art by Nainita Desai. Again, thank you both so much for joining me on the show.
Thank you for having me.
Thank you for having me.
Thank you.